Welcome. Thanks for attending the talk today. Today I'm going to be speaking about effective configuration management, 9 things that everybody should be doing if you're using configuration management. I want to start off by saying that I've sort of targeted a beginner's audience. So I know some of you guys out here in the audience are really skilled. You have multiple tools under your belt. You've been operating for a couple of years. You know all the ins and out, but I'm trying to focus on someone who is either not using configuration management or has just started using it or is using it, but probably not as effectively as they think they should be. But stick around. Everybody gets something out of this usually when I give this talk. So a couple of intro items. Like Mike said, I'm a Unix systems administrator. I've been around for a while. I am been using configuration management for about 10 years or so, CF Engine, bconfig, things like that. In the early days, I should probably mention that we are in the early days of configuration management, and you can kind of debate me on that, but how many of you guys remember about 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, where source control used to be, right? You would go around to software shops, you'd say, hey, are you guys using source control? Are you guys using version control? And people would say, no, that's not for me, right? We only have one guy. We only have 2 developers. Our system is not that complex. We don't really need source control, right? We have since won that battle. I don't think there's anybody here who develops software without using version control, right? The newer modern version control tools are really light. You can kick it up instantaneously. And I don't think there's anyone who doesn't use version control. Unfortunately, configuration management is not at that state. There are a lot of places I go to. I talk to a lot of sysadmins. They do not use configuration management, and they have a couple of reasons. And in the past, as I've talked with them, I thought that there were valid reasons. But more and more, I'm kind of beginning to see that if you're not using configuration management, you're not in the right place. So just to get a feel for the audience, can you raise your hand and tell me if you are a systems administrator or an IT manager, or you manage systems? Okay, that's pretty much everybody here. For those of you who raise your hands, how many of you folks are using configuration management of some sort? Okay, that's a good portion of the audience. How many of you are either not using it or want to switch to something else or something like that? You're evaluating configuration management? Okay, there's a good chunk of you there. Okay. This is for you guys. I'm going to give a disclaimer before I start. I am not a paid shill for any of the products. I'm going to mention a couple of products. Most of them are open source. Some of them are proprietary. I don't get any financial advantage from using any of them. I like some of them, and I'm a user of some of them, and that's about it. I don't benefit in any way. So that's my disclaimer. So if I mention a product, it's only because I like it or it's been recommended to me. The other caveat that I'm going to mention is, like I said, we have a mix of gurus and beginners here. How many of you guys have read The Elements of Style by Strunk and White? It's a little English book. For those of you who have not read it before, maybe you're not a native English speaker like I was, English was not my first language. I struggled for years with the rules of English, with the rules of grammar, until I found that thin volume, The Elements of Style. And one of the greatest things that they say in that book, if you haven't read it, go and grab it. They talk about rules and breaking rules, right? And they say that here are the rules for English, here are the rules for grammar. If you don't know what you're doing, follow these rules, right? Once you get to the level where you're a guru, you've been around for a while, you're gonna do this, you know how the system's in the back of your hand, it's okay to break the rules, okay? Rules are made to be broken. So that's the disclaimer I'm gonna give, the caveat I'm gonna give for here. Some of you guys are gurus, you've been around for a while, you know what you're doing. Feel free to break these rules, feel free to come afterwards and kind of debate and argue the points. But if you are starting off, if you're not too sure about configuration management, you're better off following the rules rather than breaking them, okay? All right, let's get started then. I was hoping to have 10 of these, so I can call them the 10 commandments. Unfortunately, I have 9 of them, so propositions is what I'm going to use. Proposition one is use configuration management, okay? If you are not using configuration management, you should be using configuration management, okay? Regardless of how small or large your team is or how many systems you're managing, pick a modern, proper configuration management tool and use it. Like I said earlier, there are folks who say we don't need configuration management. You talk to them and say, hey, we only have one sysadmin. We only have 2 sysadmins. Why would we use configuration management? We only have five systems. And in the past, in the years past, I would have a number when I spoke to people. I would say, if you have at least 100 systems, okay, you should be using systems configuration management. Then I started bringing that number down. If you had 50, okay. Then I started telling, okay, if you have 10, 10 was the magic number that I, for a couple of years, I would tell people. If you have more than 10, okay, you should be using configuration management. I don't do that anymore. If you have one system and one sysadmin, I recommend that you use configuration management, okay? There are all these rebuttals that we don't have enough machines, we don't have enough people. We have our own system that does it. Our system is too simple for that. Our system is too complex for that. That's not valid arguments. You should be using configuration management, okay? The biggest gotcha that I see is most people say, hey, we only have one or two sysadmins. They know the system like the back of their hands, right? You know, you've seen those old school sysadmins. They know everything about the system. You ask them a question, oh, I know what that is. Before you even tell them what broke, they know what's broken, right? The problem with that state, just having a few sysadmins who kind of know the system, is one of these days, that sysadmin will no longer be there. How many of you guys have faced a situation like that, right? You had some guru, and for whatever reason, he went away. He found a better paying job. His girlfriend said, hey, you have to move with me to the other coast. I had a situation like that. We had an LDAP admin, great guy, didn't use any config management. And then one day, girlfriend said, hey, move to the other coast with me. And then he was gone within 2 weeks, right? You will have a situation where you will have an admin one day, and then very soon, within 2 weeks or less, that person will not be there, okay? And you can't rely on people being there. People lie all the time, okay? People have misconstrued memories. They're not being malicious, but they're going to say, oh, I think the system does this when it does that. Documentation is not going to be there, especially for the old school sysadmins. Nobody likes documenting. Nothing is documented. Nothing is written down, okay? That's why you need configuration management. One of these days, your sysadmin will go away, or that sysadmin that knew everything will go away, and you need something in its place that won't go away. That's why you need configuration management, because you can go back to the system and see what they did, how they did it, things like that, okay? Not enough machines. I always tell people, if you have one system and it matters to you that if it goes down or not, you need configuration management. Most people have a non-trivial amount of machines. How many of you manage 10 machines or less? It's a small shop. Okay, one person. How many of you manage 10 to 100, up to 100 machines? Okay. How many of you manage between 100 and 1,000? A good amount, more than 1,000? Yep, there's a couple of you here. Yesterday's Birds of Feather session for BeaconFig, we had at least two groups. One had 1,800 machines, one had 1,500. I've talked to people that have clustered setups, 5,000 machines, financial trading companies, 10,000 machines or upwards. But even if you just have two machines, one machine, you need configuration management. You need to be able to say, hey, I have this one machine, it's a web app profiled machine, and one day I'm going to add another one, all right? And you're not going to remember everything you did to configure that first box on that second box. You need configuration management. If you have it set up in configuration management, you just add another box, add the name, IP, bang, you're good to go. Your configuration management system takes care of that, okay? So even just one machine, use the config management system, okay? If you disagree with that, come and see me afterwards. I'd love to talk to you. Most people see the light after a while, okay? Even if it's just a one-off box, a lot of people have 50 web servers, 10 database machines, you know, a couple of app servers, but then they have that one utility box, right? And they say, oh, that utility box doesn't need to be in configuration management. That's where you need it, because if that utility box goes away, you're SOL, okay? And never say that you have too complex or too simple a setup. With the tools that are out there today, with the configuration management systems, it's very easy to set up. It's very easy to get it running. You can do pretty much all the simple things very quickly, so you don't need a big, beefy system. You don't need a lot of overhead. And especially if you have a complex system, configuration management can really help. Most of the complicated things that you can do with a config management tool, with the modern tools, is very easy to do. So definitely use one of them. I'm going to try and be as system agnostic as possible. I don't want to favor one system over another, but I came up with this short list, these six tools. If you're using one of these tools, you're in the right place. They're pretty modern. They have a couple of things in common. They're all actively developed. They have a very fairly large user install base. They're well documented. You can go look up the documentation. Some of them have books written. I know for CF Engine, Diego Zamboni's around signing his books. Most of them have books or documentation, very good documentation. Almost all of them have mailing lists and forums. Most of them also have paid support. Like if you have a problem, it's an emergency, you can pay a consultant or the company themselves. A lot of them have pre-existing modules that you can use, cookbooks, what have you. Most of them are multi-platform to a reasonable degree. I think all of them run on a POSIX environment, a generic Unix environment. Most of them can also do macOS. Some of them can do Windows. So email me if you have a configuration management system that's not on that list and you think should be. So pick one of them. For those of you who are evaluating systems, I think there is no better place than this conference to pick a tool. There are tons of vendors out here representing themselves. At the Birds of a Feather session tonight, I know that CF Engine, Puppet, and I think Salt is going to be representing, so definitely check them out. Talk to the users. I think mostly everybody here raised their hands when they said they were using configuration management. So if you have a problem, hey, say, hey, I know you guys are using Puppet. How do you guys do this? Or we have this issue with bconfig. You know, how do you guys do that? CF Engine is acting kind of crazy. What's the best way to do this? Okay, talk to the people around you. Ask them how they're doing it. Figure out what's going on with them. All right. So use configuration management. That's proposition one. Okay. Second proposition I'm going to make, once you have a configuration management system, pick a modern version control tool for the backend repository. Most of these configuration management tools, most of them, very few exceptions, use a directory tree in the backend, and you use source control to manage that. It's a text-based directory tree, and as far as I know, I haven't met anybody with a non-trivial setup that doesn't use source control for their backend. Is anybody here that doesn't do that? Okay. Mostly everybody does. Pick one of the modern tools, Git, Subversion, Mercurial, they're all good choices. This presupposes that you do have a text-based directory backend. There is a tool, it's for Windows, I want to say it's called SCCM. I'm told it doesn't use a text-based backend. Maybe somebody can correct me. So I don't recommend using a configuration management tool that does not have a text-based repository as its backend. Okay, don't use any GUI tools, because what you want to do is you want to separate out the systems. You want to use the best version control tool with the configuration management tool that's appropriate for you. Okay, and you get a couple of things with a proper version control tool. Reversibility, concurrency, annotation are the three big ones. Reversibility, you can go back to any point in history. You can see what changes were made. You want to go back a day, you want to go back three changes, you want to see what changes were made on a particular file or a particular directory, module, what have you. Version control allows you to do that very easily. Concurrency, more than one user using it at the same time. How many of you guys have multiple users using your configuration management tool, right? You want to use a proper version control tool for that very reason, okay? Users being users, they're not going to communicate. Most of the version control tools tell you it's not a substitute for communication, but people being what they are not going to communicate. They're not going to tell people, hey, I'm going to be editing this. Hey, I'm going to be doing that, okay? So version control kind of gets that for you, right? How many of you guys used Blame or Annotate, the Blame or Annotate feature of their source control tool, right? If you haven't used it and you're using source control, check out Git Blame, SVN Blame, CVS Annotate. It just allows you to take a file that checks into source control, say Git Blame on it, and it'll list the contents of the file, and it'll tell you who touched each line last and what check-in and what date, okay? It's a fantastic utility. Very quickly, a lot of times I can't tell you, we have issues, we have problems, and what happens is something breaks and everybody says, hey, I didn't touch it. I don't know who touched it, right? But then you go in and you check out the file and hey, wait a minute, looks like Joe here touched it last. Hey, what's going on? And you ask him and you say, oh, well, I didn't know that would break, right? So concurrency, the annotate tools are your good friends, okay? That's one of the major features you get with version control. Annotation, I just mentioned annotation. It tells you who checked in what changed. You can do some fantastic diffs and things like that to see. How many of you use Git Bisect? I started using that fantastic tool to figure out in a really quick manner what change broke the system. Really great. A couple of other things that a good version control tool gets you, multiple branches of development. How many of you guys are using more than one line of development, more than just master? Okay, a good amount of you, right? The site where I work, we have at any given time four lines of development. four branches. We have one for production, one for staging, one for QA, and then we have like a graveyard environment where everybody kind of does what they want, okay? Version control is great for this, okay? You can have multiple people edit the system and have it go either when they want it, if you have time-based branches, or a particular release, you know, this is version 17, it all goes in here, the version 17 branch, things like that. So take advantage of that in your version control tool. If you're not using branching, branching is really cheap now, it's a cheap copy of a pointer. They all pretty much have decent merging strategies, merging features. Take advantage of that in your version control tool, okay? If you're not doing that, look into doing that. There's a lot of literature on branching and merging. I won't go into that part of software development, but take advantage of that. One of the nice things that I knew about branching before I came in to the current site, but one of the things I learned from the developers, feature branching, story branching. If you guys are adding a non-trivial feature to your system, and it's more than one line change, you can make a branch. That's your feature story branch. Work on the branch however many days, weeks, months that you want. You can have people checking in out of the branch. You can have multiple people checking into a branch. And then when you're done and you're done with all your code review and things like that, you can merge it back in. It's a fantastic feature if you have large changes going in, okay? So definitely take advantage of your version control tool. Use that, okay? Finally, you have hooks. Most people here are using hooks, I imagine. Hooks are little shell scripts. I think SVN and Git for sure, and Mercurial also calls them hooks. They're little shell scripts that run before, after, during your commit to kind of massage the data. You have, most people use pre-commit hooks. They use some kind of testing validity feature. You know, if some syntax is broken, something like that, the commit doesn't pass, okay? So all of that comes in a proper version control tool. So take advantage of that. Okay. The first two, I don't think anybody will disagree, debate with me. We're going to get into a couple of slides where some of probably the more advanced users will kind of question it, but trust me on this one, okay? Proposition 3, use a validation testing suite. Before pushing out a newly committed change, make sure it has been run against and passes your testing suite. Most of you here have hooks, right? I think I talked, most people I talked to have a small set, okay? I'm going to suggest that you make that as large as possible. Test everything, okay? Everything that can be committed into your system, test it. You can do a whole bunch of tests. You can lint your configuration management system, the repository. How many of you guys know whether or not your CM system has a linter? Right? I know Puppet does, bconfig does. Most of them do. If they don't have it built in, you can get a third-party tool to use it. Okay? Lint your repository before you check it in. What does that mean? Checking for syntax in XML files, YAML files. Checking the syntax of sudoers, the password file. If you have monitoring, running Nagios V on a generated file. These are all tests you can run, okay? You wanna make your test suite as large as possible, as comprehensive as possible. And if you're not doing that, it will come back to bite you, okay? Some sites use version control hooks. I'm gonna recommend that you use a continuous integration tool. Strongly recommend that. It's designed for the task. It's built to do that. It runs continuously, as the name implies. You can add tests in a very easy manner. Hooks are okay. They're not as flexible, but use a continuous integration tool if you can. How many of you guys use CI, Jenkins, or something like that? All right, a good amount of you. Check out Jenkins. Jenkins is a fantastic tool. It allows you to commit to your repository. Jenkins will check it out, check out the original repository plus your commit, run a bunch of tests, and very quickly come back and tell you it passed or it didn't pass. And you add as many tests as you want, okay? Use continuous integration. Use a large testing suite, okay? If you have a problem and you hit something and something breaks, one of the first questions you should be asking is, why didn't we have a test for this, right? Add a test. You can test pretty much everything. Write a test for it. Code review. This is probably the most controversial thing I tell people to do. Before making any commit into your configuration management repository, make sure it is audited by at least one other peer. How many of you guys are using some sort of code review tool? I include pull requests, GitHub, things like that. Okay, there's a couple of you. I'm gonna make a statement. There is nothing better than you can do than code review and testing, okay? Code review. You can do it a couple of different ways. Most people, I think, are familiar with GitHub pull requests. So if you have GitHub or GitHub Enterprise on your site, you're doing the pull request, you have someone review your changes before it gets pulled in. That's code review. Bitbucket recently, I think the end of last year, end of 2012, added something they call lightweight code review. If you're using Subversion, Track has a couple of plugins. I haven't used any of them, peer review, code review, similar names like that. Garrett is the one we use, and that's the one I recommend. Anybody here also use Garrett. Garrett is a Google tool. I believe they developed it for their Android platform. It's a fantastic tool. I'll show you some screenshots here in a moment. I'll show you some screenshots for Garrett in a moment, but use one of these tools, okay? A lot of people kind of struggle with this. Couple of things they say, the change I made is really small, okay? You hear that all the time, okay? I made a really small change. It's one line, it won't affect anything, okay? The fact of the matter is, because of the nature of configuration management, your one little change, your one little repository change, one little line that you think won't affect anything, has an amplified effect, okay? You're gonna go and hit, that one little change will hit sometimes hundreds, thousands of boxes, okay? So a minute change can cause huge, huge consequences in your data center, in your machines, in your production environment, okay? So don't ever think when it comes to configuration management that something is a small change and won't affect anything, okay? Some people say code review is too slow. That's a common argument you hear. Make it lightweight, okay? That's what I say. There's different kinds of code review. You can go and look at the literature and say, you know, there's peer review, there's this, there's that. A couple of different techniques to use. The thing that I recommend is use lightweight code review, meaning if you are checking something in, get at least one other person to take a look at it, okay? Most of the time, you'll catch most of the errors like that. If you have larger changes, you have larger patch sets going in, obviously you need to step back, you need to have multiple people review it, you might need to have a code review session where you schedule a meeting, everybody reads the code, things like that. But most of the changes you commit on a daily basis are small one or two line changes to maybe one file or a couple of files, okay? Code review is great for that. You can just add someone in. You can say, hey, code review my change before it goes out. It takes them less than 5 minutes, usually less than a minute. They quickly eyeball it. You're not looking to look for syntax or things like that, okay? That's part of the testing suite. You just want them to eyeball it, make sure it looks sane, make sure you know what you're doing, and you know, you're working late, you're working early, you might have eaten, you ate too much, whatever the case is, someone else will catch what is obvious that you didn't catch, okay? And then you hear a lot, I know what I'm doing. Be careful of people who say that. There was a graphic passed around on the internet, Reddit, what have you, a couple of months ago. How many of you guys have seen it? It's a matrix of images, and it's developers, QA designers, PM, sysadmins, as seen by the other groups. You guys have seen that? I would have put it up here, but I think I might have violated Usenet's policy if I put it up. The interesting line of that matrix is the sysadmin, right? The sysadmin group, as seen by everybody else. In that group, the sysadmins are all giving everyone else the finger, right? As seen by the designers, the QMs, the PMs, the QAs, what have you. The only team that doesn't see a sysadmin like that is the sysadmins themselves. They have a picture of Neo from the Matrix with sunglasses, right? You're gonna get sysadmins like that. You're gonna get folks like that. When we had code review pushed on us, this is one of the few things that the development team that we had came to us and said, hey, you guys should be using this. And unanimously, every sysadmin that I worked with said, no, why do we need that? I know what I'm doing, right? I don't make mistakes, or I don't make as many mistakes as the developers, right? They have tons of bugs, right? They have products that just store bugs in a big database. We don't have anything like that. But trust me, code review is very important because small changes can make big, big changes, and sometimes they can be disastrous, okay? So use code review. Just really quickly, I'll go into it. Here's a sample code review session from Garrett. That's what we use. In this change, somebody removed a rewrite block from an Apache config. That's what they see. If you're familiar with Garrett, GitHub, you see something similar for GitHub pull requests, something similar. They quickly eyeballed that. The code review was set up. They're really smart now. It does a little bit of syntax highlighting. It knows the language, things like that. You tell somebody, hey, Joe, code review my request, take a quick look. He takes a quick look. He sees what you're doing. He signs off on it. Pretty good. You have something similar to the following. GitHub can give you, you can have zero for no score, a plus one or a minus one. You can go as far as plus two, minus two. I suggest that you keep your voting rules very simple. Plus one or minus one, that's sufficient for most things, okay? Plus one, I like this change, you can go through. If anybody doesn't vote, they get a zero, it's okay. Any minus one vote will derail the change, it stops right there. That will cover 99% of cases that you have, okay? Very simple, takes just a couple of seconds to do that. And in this particular case, I pulled out a change. You can see on the code review column, you had two people plus one and someone else kind of give it a push it through. We have some complicated rules here. I don't recommend that. And then you have a column, verified. Garrett is really interesting in that it sits in front of your Git repo, and it acts as sort of the gatekeeper. And so Garrett can plug into Jenkins very, very nicely. And so you can tell Garrett, hey, in order for this commit to pass, you need to have at least one person code review it. They should check off it and sign in, and you need the verification test to pass. And in this case, we have Garrett talking to Jenkins, running a bunch of tests. And when those two things happen, your commit goes in. Okay, very easy to set up. There's a bunch of open source tools for code review. Pick one, use it, implement it. Okay. I put a note here. Proper use of your testing suite and code review tool will catch 95% of potential problems. Okay, if you properly implement testing, a testing suite, if you properly implement code review, 95% of the mistakes that you can make, which are most of the time silly mistakes, will be caught by this system. Okay, what about the other 5%? For the ones that get through, add a test. Okay, every time you make a mistake, every time your configuration management system brings down a box, brings down a service, breaks something in prod. Does everybody here have postmortems or retro meetings, things like that? When stuff breaks, you should. It's part of the change management philosophy, right? If some change goes through that breaks something, you guys should be sitting down in your postmortem and saying, how did this change get through? Okay. Most of the time, we have found out someone bypassed the code review system. In the early days, we used to tell the sysadmins, okay, if you guys are in a hurry, you can bypass the system. And what happened when they did that was there was no code review, there was no testing, it just got pushed through. And they assumed that it would work, okay? So don't bypass the system, okay? When you follow the rules, most of the time, these mistakes get caught. But for the few mistakes that don't get caught, sit down and say, can we check for this? Is there a way to check this in the future that doesn't happen? Just a really trivial example. In the early days of when we started out the company, everybody had a Sudoers check, you know, when you check the Sudoers file. Everybody had a Sudoers check as a hook in their Git repo, in their personal Git repo, in their working copy. Every time they edited Sudoers, it would do a vi sudo minus c minus f, whatever, okay? Newer sysadmins came along, and what happened was we would tell them, hey, just add it in, and we just got lazy, didn't add it to the testing suite. And one day, somebody edited Sudoers, I think they were using Notepad or something like that, added an extra tab or missed a comma or something like that, checked in a broken Sudoers. It was not checked for in our test suite. It got pushed out everywhere. And I had a fun day that day, logging into a bunch of boxes, fixing that manually. Add a test for everything that breaks, okay? Look long and hard at what breaks. Most things you can test for, most things you can write a quick shell script to test for the existence of, the validity of, push it through. Okay. This is kind of trivial, but a lot of people, I found out, don't seem to do it. There's a right way and a wrong way to use configuration management. There's a way to just kind of say you're using it but not really use it. Use your configuration management's templating facilities. Never manage more than one copy of a file. Use your templating facilities to manage one file along with a variable properties list, okay? Everybody knows that old rule. If you have two copies of anything, what's going to happen? Yep. They're going to go out of sync, okay? Sooner or later, that will happen. If you are managing more than one copy of anything, in your configuration management repository, you're going to have problems. They will diverge. Okay, really trivial example here. Don't do this. These are two versions of ntp.conf. You could have, if you look really carefully, they only differ in the server lines. One is obviously for a QA site. One is for a prod site. Okay, I have seen a bunch of repositories where people have different versions of a file for various environments. Okay, they have a copy of for dev, they have a copy for QA, they have a copy for this, a couple of dev environments and things like that. That's a bad way to do configuration management. Some of you are saying, duh, everybody knows that, but not a lot of people know that. A lot of people manage multiple copies of the file, okay? What's the proper way to do this? Use your configuration management tools templating feature. This one's called Genshi, it's a part of bconfig. That little server line at the bottom is kind of parsed out. There's a little bit of code there. Hope everybody can understand that. At the top, you have a stanza that kind of pulls in the servers that are appropriate for the environment. So this is one file. You're only managing one file. okay? And then what happens is later you have a properties group, properties file, where you list all the servers for a particular environment, okay? That's the way you should be doing it. This is probably one of the harder things to do, because if you take a bunch of your files into configuration management and you start it from scratch, you're gonna have cases where you have multiple copies of the same file, but it is well worth it to template everything, okay? It's a little hard, it requires a little bit of scripting, a little bit of creative engineering, but template everything as much as possible, okay? Proposition 6, use your CM for provisioning, okay? You should be able to use your configuration management tool to provision new systems with little manual intervention. How many of you folks can auto-provision, spin up a new box with very little intervention? Okay, a good amount of you. For the rest of you, that's the state you need to be in. You need to be able to just, at a push of a button, spin up existing host classes, okay? It allows you to scale on demand. With EC2 and cloud services, it's kind of necessary because of the nature of those services. You know, you're spinning up as much as you need on demand, you're provisioning on demand. Do that with existing host classes and profiles or classes, what have you. And everything should be in a profile, okay? Don't have systems that are managed by your configuration management tool and then not managed. Manage everything under your CM tool, okay? So you can provision at will, okay? I tried to look for kind of tools, but really everybody has a different way of doing it. So really the design pattern is use PXE, use Jumpstart, Kickstart, BSD install, Cobbler, what have you, to install the base system, to do the bare minimum, and then have it install just one package, your configuration management tool. And from there, your CM tool should just kind of wake up, come into existence, and take care of everything else, okay? Most folks I talk to do it like this. Cobbler and these other tools can do a whole lot more, but then now you're managing packages and configuration in two different sections, and whenever you have two copies of something, it's gonna diverge. So have your CM do everything, just have the other tools use just the base, okay? I should probably mention that all of the new modern configuration managed systems are very feature rich, and some of them plug into Amazon EC2 directly, and some of them are well known for that. So if you do have a fully cloud-based stack, if you're using solely Amazon 2 as your data center, check out the configuration management tools that really are designed for that. Use your CM for automated monitoring. For every machine that is provisioned automatically by your configuration management tool, you should also be generating monitoring. Husky mentioned this in his talk previously. I want to underscore that, okay? You should not be writing monitoring configs by hand, okay? How many of you guys auto-generate monitoring configs? Not as much as I would have hoped. If you're auto-provisioning, which most of you raised your hand for, you should be also auto-generating your monitoring configs, okay? You can't have one without the other, because what happens? You're provisioning boxes, and you're left to have someone by hand add configuration for the monitoring, okay? That's a recipe for disaster, okay? Most monitoring systems, like Nagios, have a text-based backend. They have a regular grammar and syntax. You can pretty easily generate something. So if you have a host class, Nagios has a rich inheritance facility. So if you have a web-based profile or a database host class or something like that, you can say, oh, this is a web-based box. Use all the checks that are set up for a web-based box or something like that, okay? Use your configuration management tool for automated monitoring, okay? The assumption here is the monitoring system, just like the configuration management system, uses a text-based backend. If you're using something that doesn't, I would seriously ask you to reconsider. I don't think that should be a problem for most of you. The second point is test everything through your testing suite, okay? Nagios minus V, everybody knows what that is. Check the syntax of a Nagios file. Put that into your testing suite, okay? If you're generating a new config, a new monitoring config, check it out, copy it to your testing suite, make sure it's valid before going on, okay? Nothing is worse than waking up to find out that your monitoring system broke 2 days ago because of a bad config and you haven't been checking your production boxes for the last 48 hours. It's a very special feeling. You can do tricks like adding dummy hosts for sanity checking, similar to, you know, if you're checking a database, you have a dummy table, foo, with one tuple in there, foo, you check it out, foo, you know, something like that. This is an interesting one. Use a CMDB in conjunction with your configuration management tool. How many of you guys know what a CMDB is or use one? Good, most of you. I'm going to use the Wikipedia definition. It's a repository that acts as a data warehouse for information technology orgs. Its contents is intended to hold a collection of IT assets that are commonly referred to as configuration items, as well as descriptive relationships between such assets, okay? Some configuration management tools bundle their own CMDB. I know CF Engine Enterprise does. I'm pretty sure the other ones either do or can get something plugged in. Use a CMDB that can be programmatically queried. Most of them can dump JSON or something like that that you can automate. The question that you would ask in the script is, how many database boxes do I have in my staging environment? Okay, that's a question for your CMDB. You go to your CMDB, query against it, get all these things. Okay, you can use the CMDB to pull into your configuration management tool and vice versa. You should list in your CMDB who owns a particular host class, who owns a particular machine, what team or person owns that. Okay, I don't know of too many prominent CMDB solutions out there, even the open source ones. So a lot of people use homegrown solutions. My one suggestion is, if you're using a homegrown solution, make it lightweight. Don't try to make it do everything. Don't add an Oracle rack backend or anything like that. Make it light, make it quick. Just have it be able to be parsed programmatically. That's the big thing. Don't use a spreadsheet. That's the other thing. Most people use an Excel spreadsheet as their CMDB. It effectively becomes their CMDB. Couple of reasons for that. You're now dependent on Excel or whatever to be up. Or even Google Docs, and it's not as easily parsed, okay? Spreadsheet is good for some things, but don't use it for your CMDB, okay? And don't use the configuration management backend itself as a CMDB. There's some good things that you can put in there. Some configuration management tools can annotate who owns what, but really what you should be putting in there is the name of the box, and then what kind of purpose it serves, the profile or host class or soft class or what have you. Anything else should be in your CMDB, okay? Quickly wrap up here. Last point, use your CMDB for DevOps tasks. This includes but is not limited to software, product deployments, security auditing, quality testing, et cetera. How many of you guys have someone outside your operations team using your configuration management tool, like a developer or a security tech or something like that? That's good, okay? You want to get to that spot. DevOps is a kind of a loaded term. It means different things to different people. But I usually take the Wikipedia definition for it. It's a collaboration between the dev side, and the IT side, the operations side, okay? If you're using configuration management, have your product development team hook into it, okay? It's great for deployments. A lot of people do that already. For deployments, configuration management is fantastic. It's great for security auditing. If you're under Sarbanes-Oxley or HIPAA or FERPA for education, things like that, a CMDB, a configuration management tool, can very, very quickly get you compliant. They say, hey, make sure this file is private or it can only be used by something like that. That's something you can do quickly with configuration management, okay? Use it for DevOps tasks. I've talked to a lot of non-operations people, developers. I talked to someone at lunch the other day who was a DBA, and we were talking about configuration management. He said, hey, I was at a site where they wouldn't allow us to use configuration management. They said, oh, you don't need it, whatever. So they set it up on their own, and they got up and running with it. It was very valuable, okay? Don't be a site like that. Don't be a walled garden. With all of the tools I told you, the proper version control tool, code review, a testing suite, you can open up your repository to other people, provided the proper checks and balances, the tests and things like that, and you can effectively use it across a wide variety of teams. I think at last check, we had about 150 folks checking into our repository. So our operation teams is fairly small. We have a couple of Unix admins, systems programmers, and things like that. And it took a while to get to that point where we can open it up to everybody, but it is fantastic. It is fantastic to be able to deploy software as a developer, to change configs here and there and know it'll be branched out. As an operations person, I sleep safe knowing that someone can check in, and they may not be a Unix admin, but that's okay because we'll review their stuff before it gets out, their sanity checks, things like that. So definitely take advantage of that. We have four and a half minutes left. Does anybody have any questions? Yes, go ahead. Okay. The question was, if you're in an organization where you have extreme separation of duties and different managers for things like that, it is okay to have these things managed by different teams. That's okay. It's going to be a pain for startup. Your CMDB might be managed by the group that handles all the PCs and the printers and things like that, and your configuration management is handled by Unix sysadmins and things like that. The key is in the interfaces, okay? sit down with whatever team manages CMDB and say, we want to be able to query certain things, okay? Your CMDB should be able to tell us in a JSON format, hey, who owns such and such server, right? Or something like that. Or how many database boxes there is in prod or something like that. Okay, work on the interfaces. It's okay to have multiple teams managing it, because as you grow, as you scale up, you can't have just one team managing everything, okay? So talk about the interfaces. You should have the same team managing the source control and the configuration management. If it's managed by two different teams, you definitely need to talk about getting your hooks in, getting your things like that. So just focus on the interfaces.
Hi, NJ. Thanks for that talk. Mark Curini, Mark Logic Corporation. I just wanted to push back a little bit. At the beginning, you gave the example of the person who walks away or, you know, whose girlfriend gets them to move. It's for sure that configuration management best practices go a long way toward keeping your system sane. But the problem of loss of institutional memory is not solved by configuration management. The main reason is because we rarely record the why for a change. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was being a little facetious when I said that. You're definitely right about that. I think that it go hand in hand. You need mentoring to train other parts of your organization or other groups. You need proper documentation. You need a ticketing system that, you know, has the history that you can search. All of these things are necessary. I submit probably that if you're managing a system, the most critical part of the infrastructure would be your configuration management. Not to say that you don't need documentation, not to say that you don't need folks who have that institutional memory, but the most important, I would submit, is your configuration management system. Because memories being what they are, you know, they get kind of rusty. I can't tell you how many times I've done git blame on a file thinking I'm going to kill the guy who did that. Turned out to be me, right? Twice that has happened. Twice, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting old, but the configuration management system should be the first place you turn to see the true story. If you use version control properly and you have everyone checking in, committing properly, part of that why can be answered. But you're definitely right about that. You do need those other things for sure.
All right, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Buy-in for
actually using that stuff.
Okay, yeah. Ideas, strategies on how to get departmental buy-in for using these tools. There have been a number of papers written on all of these aspects, on using a configuration management system, on using code review, on using a testing suite, on using continuous integration, okay? There are companies, I don't like to turn to companies because, you know, they're not as objective, but there are companies that put out literature to say, you need to use this product. You need to use continuous integration. All of that literature is really great. Try to go for the proceedings of various conferences like this. When we had code review, I actually stopped and looked at the other folks who had written papers on code review, and then that helped me kind of settle internally. Hey, this is okay, this is something we can use. If you're trying to sell to someone else, a lot of the marketing literature for these various tools is great. Just be aware that, you know, it's not as objective as it could be. Proceedings from conferences like this are great.
John Roulard, I just want to address Mark's point. One of the things I do in our system is you have to reference an RT ticket number with every check-in to the CM system.
Right.
So that sort of closes the loop as to the why.
Yeah.
We've actually solved a number of problems by looking, seeing what RT ticket, going back and looking at the original. The other thing also is one of your components of your VCS is also access control and delegation. You can control through that who you allow to change something, who you allow to read something. We actually keep certificates and things in our CM system.
Yep.
And you have to block access to those from people that are not supposed to access it.
Yep. Two very good points. First point, you can hook up your ticket tracking system, your bug tracking system. A lot of folks use it that when you mention fog bugs or Jira or something like that in your Git logs, it'll automatically generate a link. So when you're perusing the logs later, you can click back and either go to that ticket. And then take advantage of the access control in your version control tools to manage who has access to what. It's a good point. Yes?
The CMDB, does that play nicely with version control? If it's a real database, it does binary blob and...
The CMDBs I've used have been mostly homegrown. I make an argument for CMDBs should be really text-based, like backends, and really it should have a version control backend. I've not used a system like that yet. Like I said, I've not been happy with any of the CMDBs I've used so far, even our homegrown stuff. I've been arguing to not use Postgres or MySQL or even SQLite as a backend, just to use the flat file. And if that's the case, you can certainly put it into version control as the backend and see that. And so that's a very, very good idea. For those of you who are developers or system developers, please write a CMDB that people can use and use that as a feature. I would love to see that.
Also,
go ahead.
Can you name a couple of continuous integration tools that you have worked well?
We use Jenkins now. Jenkins is the clear winner in this space. Unlike CMDB, Jenkins, everybody uses Jenkins. It goes by the older name Hudson. I've used Cruise Control and other similar tools in the past. None of them have been very good. Jenkins has more or less cornered the market. It's an open source tool. So that's the one I recommend. I think we are running
last
out of time.
Question.
So yeah, last question.
I really don't have a question, but there is a open source CMDB that I'm working on, and
okay.
It's released in open source.
What's the name of it?
It's called HostDB.
HostDB, okay.
Is
that Tom's tool? Tom Limoncelli's tool?
Yeah.
Okay, he's written something called HostDB.
Yes.
Okay.
So this one has Git as a backend, so exactly what you're talking about. I'm doing a poster session about it in the evening.
Okay, very good. HostDB, a new open source CMDB. All right. Thank you, everyone. I'll be available for questions.